It's a real delight to welcome our next instructor here at Wide-Moat Investing Summit 2017. We have Artem Fokin joining us from San Francisco, California. Artem is the founder and portfolio manager of Cairo Khan Capital LLC, which has a focus on special situations as well as compounders, which clearly is quite relevant for today's conversation. Prior to founding Cairo Khan, Artem was a principal at Outrider Management LLC. Additionally, Artem has a legal background. He was formerly an attorney, which I think is quite relevant for his special situation expertise. Artem, we are really honored that you're here with us and look forward to your comments. Please proceed.
Thank you, Shai. It's a pleasure to be with you and with the audience today. And the idea which I would like to present today is Commerce Hub. And obviously, we own the stock since we believe it perfectly fits into the description of a company with a wide moat. As you mentioned, Cairo Khan Capital LLC is the general partner of the fund with a similar name, which we launched in March 2015, and we focus on special situations and compounders. Sometimes those two come inside of one company, which makes us particularly excited. And we believe that Commerce Hub is exactly one of them. So let me introduce the company. To get all of us a general sense of what we're looking at, this is a capital structure at a glance. So right now we're dealing with a company with a slightly less than $800 million enterprise value with pristine balance sheet. As you can see, the debt and debt equivalents stand only at $10 million. What we like about this company? Before we dive in, let me provide a high-level summary. First of all, Commerce Hub will benefit from a long growth runway. We're talking about 5, 10 years, and quite probably even longer than that. That long runway of growth is mostly powered by continuous growth of e-commerce. Second, Commerce Hub has a particularly strong moat, which is based on a powerful network effect. Currently, there are about 50 suppliers, which are among the largest suppliers in the United States, and about 10,000 suppliers. What we like even more is that that moat is being built as we speak. In our experience, most rewards accrue to holders of the stock while the company is building that moat rather than to holders who come and become shareholders when that moat has been already built. That's why we're very excited to be shareholders of Commerce Hub. Third, we believe that we're buying into SaaS company at non-SaaS valuation. CHOP trades at 10 or even 15 turns of discount, and this is not a typo, to similar companies which operate based on software as a service model. Fourth, we like the product and we like the compelling customer value proposition which Commerce Hub provides. It helps retailers and it helps suppliers to solve mission critical tasks at a very modest cost. We like an excellent margin profile. We're talking about 80% gross margin, which is very similar to the best software as a service company. And we're talking about 40% plus EBITDA, and this is after stock-based compensation expense, and we want to highlight that in their core dropshipping business. There is also some upside optionality, which may not be apparent to many people at the first glance. Right now, Commerce Hub is developing the second business. It's called Brands Initiative. It's very small right now. It's about $10 million in revenue, and it's currently losing money. But it has a tremendous potential, and we'll get back to that later. We also like the management team. CEO, who is also a founder, is at the helm of the company, and incentives are aligned. Founder Frank Poor started company, left, and then came back a few years ago. And shortly before the spin-off, which happened in July 2016, Mr. Poor received an option grant, which would make him a 5% shareholder. Those options are currently slightly in the money. We also love ultra-low customer acquisition costs. Commerce Hub is spending about 10% of its revenue on sales and marketing. This compares very favorably to 30% plus what a typical SaaS company spends. Why does this opportunity exist? This is a logical question that you may be asking right now. There are a few reasons in our opinion. First, this is the recent spin-off. Commerce Hub was spun off in July 2016 from Liberty Ventures, which is one of Dr. Malone companies. If you are a fan of spin-offs, if you're a fan of Dr. Malone, you probably need no introduction to why this situation immediately got our attention. There is a second reason. Historically, Commerce Hub was reporting its stock-based compensation based on very arcane and very convoluted GAAP accounting rules. As a result, a person who would look at spin-off information statement would likely come to a conclusion, without doing additional work, of course, that stock-based compensation was extraordinarily high. We think that a true level of stock-based compensation was really overstated by about 25 to 30 million. And the third reason is the brand initiative, which I already briefly mentioned. That small business, which is being developed inside Commerce Hub right now, is masking the true revenue growth rate of Commerce Hub core business and the true margin profile. So, let's look at what Commerce Hub actually does. Commerce Hub provides software as a service, dropshipping, to retailers and their suppliers for a fee when a customer buys goods online. This brings the next question. What is dropshipping? This is a traditional e-commerce fulfillment model. If a consumer goes online to a retailer's website and makes a purchase, in an old world, supplier would ship, or probably pre-shipped already, those goods to a retailer's warehouse. When a customer and consumer makes an order online, retailer's employees go to a warehouse, pick up the right SKU, put it into a box, and ship it to a customer. Then those items arrive, and customer got what he wanted. This is drop shipping fulfillment model. As you can see, there is no flow of goods from supplier to retailer and then to the customer. What happens is that retailer does not store those items in its warehouse. When a customer makes a purchase, retailer communicates with the supplier and supplier ships that item directly to a customer. What is important here is that customer will probably never know that retailer never touched those goods. The box would look like as if it came from a retailer. Packaging would look like as it came from a retailer. Receipt would look the same way. In other words, this drop shipping fulfillment model allows retailers to make a very positive impression on the customer without actually touching their goods. So, why drop shipping is important? Well, the short answer would be that drop shipping benefits everybody in the ecosystem. Let's dive into this. First of all, at a very high level, drop shipping creates a little bit more of a level playing field for retailers in the world where e-commerce importance is growing. Retailers benefit from wider assortment of SKUs without carrying actual inventory. Thanks to drop shipping, retailers can expand their SKU assortment from roughly 100,000, which would typically one would find in a store, to millions on the website. This is what is called virtual inventory. Virtual inventory has many wonderful traits. One of them is that retailer does not need to store virtual inventory in a warehouse. Consequently, there are no storage costs and there are no working capital requirements. There is no aging risk for inventory. Isn't it beautiful? Furthermore, retailers are capital constrained. They don't have millions and millions of dollars to spend on building and improving their warehouses right now. And without bigger warehouses, more modern warehouses, they cannot expand the assortment of goods. However, virtual inventory and dropshipping would allow them to do exactly that with virtually no capex. Customers also benefit. We, as customers, like going to a website of retailers and see a wider selection of goods which we may want to buy. Customers also benefit from getting their orders faster. Retailers and consumers benefit from less shipping costs. Think about it. In traditional model, there will be two shipments from the warehouse of a supplier to a retailer and then from a retailer to an end customer. In dropshipping model, there is only one shipment. And finally, supply benefits because it becomes easier to get the shelf space because virtual shelf space has no limitations. Now, let's address the Commerce Hub customer value proposition. There are two elements there, and both of them are important. First of all, when a customer makes a purchase on a retailer's website, retailer needs to seamlessly communicate with the computer system and IT system of a particular supplier and make a simultaneous decision whether that item can be drop-shipped, how quickly it can be drop-shipped, where they're located in supplier's warehouse, in which state of the United States, how long it will take. That's a very challenging task. You add on top of that retailer wants to be updated and wants to know how that order is progressing. Is it running late? If it is, retailer wants to notify the customer. What can be done? All those tasks are very technologically challenging and non-trivial. And Commerce Hub takes the pain, takes the challenge, and solves it for retailers and suppliers. And there is the second element of the value proposition. Retailers always drop some suppliers and add others. This is a constant process. If a retailer were to onboard all those suppliers with its own internal staff, that will be very expensive, that will be costly, and it will take extraordinarily long time. However, Commerce Hub takes care of that as well. Commerce Hub has a very interesting and unusual go-to-market strategy. Commerce Hub operates two-sided platform business. One side is retailers, another side, suppliers. What is interesting is that Commerce Hub really acquires only retailers. And so far, it has acquired about 50 of them. Retailers bring their suppliers, and right now there are about 10,000 suppliers on the platform. If supplier wants to do business with the retailer and participate in dropshipping program, and that retailer uses Commerce Hub, supplier will have to do the same. Supplier will have to join Commerce Hub platform. Obviously, retailers cannot force their suppliers to participate in dropshipping, but our channel checks and conversations with retailers and suppliers show that almost all suppliers are happy to participate in dropshipping program because it could potentially lead to more revenue and as a result, more profit. This model results in very low customer acquisition costs, about 10% of revenue. And that intuitively makes sense. It's significantly cheaper to acquire 50 customers rather than 10,000. This is some customers which are currently served by Commerce Hub. And I'm sure you will recognize many names here. QVC, which was the first large retailer which Commerce Hub won about 15 years ago or so, Best Buy, Costco, Toys for Us. Now, let's talk about Commerce Hub business model. Commerce Hub derives three revenue streams. There is base subscription revenue, there is usage revenue, and there are setup professional and service fees. Revenue stream number one, subscription revenue. It's about 25 to 27% of total annual revenue. The subscription fee is paid both by retailers and suppliers. The subscription fee is flat, but it's dependent on the number of connected trading partners. The more trading partners you have, the higher the subscription fee will be. The next revenue stream is the usage revenue. And this is the most important revenue stream because it's about 68% of total annual revenue. Usage fee is per transaction, and it does not depend on the value of an order. In practice, and using aggregated data, usage fee ends up about 50 basis points of gross merchandise volume. So, Commerce Hub will collect about 50 cents for every $100 of GMV which flows through its platform. If you add subscription and usage, again, at the aggregated level, we're talking about 75 basis points of GMV. In our opinion, and our conversations with customers confirm that, this is quite affordable. The third revenue stream is more of ad hoc revenue. This is setup and professional services revenue. They run about 5 to 7%, and they are one-time in nature. Think about it this way. If a retailer or a large supplier onboards Commerce Hub, and maybe they have some technical challenges because of their legacy software or things like that, they may engage Commerce Hub employees to help them, and they will pay one-time fees to Commerce Hub. We think the model, revenue model of Commerce Hub is very interesting. It's really a recurring revenue model, but with a twist. Commerce Hub derives recurring revenue similar to many other software as a service companies. However, the twist is this. Commerce Hub usage revenue will be increasing with every new e-commerce transaction that involves dropshipping. Thus, unlike many other software as a service companies, Commerce Hub does not have to sign any new customer in order to keep growing. We will point out that we do expect that Commerce Hub will continue winning new customers, both among retailers and suppliers. As a result of this revenue model with a twist, Commerce Hub is, in our opinion, uniquely levered to secular e-commerce growth. Now, let's talk about growth outlook. There are massive tailwinds that will be benefiting Commerce Hub. First, total e-commerce growth. Second, increasing penetration of virtual inventory and dropshipping among existing customers. Third, Commerce Hub will be signing new customers. And fourth, there is a very real possibility of international expansion. When we put those drivers together, we believe that Commerce Hub is well positioned to be growing between 13 to 18% for many years. 11 to 14% of that will be coming from e-commerce growth. 1 to 2% can be coming from increasing wallet share and increasing penetration. And 1 to 2% can be coming from winning new customers. Let's talk about expanding mode. There are two sources of sustainable competitive advantage. First is switching costs, and the second is network effect. Switching costs are similar to many other SaaS players. Offerings become embedded in business and operating processes of the clients, and it becomes very difficult to switch. there is a pain up front, you need to train your own personnel, then there is always a risk that something will go wrong during transition period, your end customers may be unhappy, and you're doing that for about 75 basis points of GMV which flows through. Is it really worth switching? This is the first mode. The second mode, which is in our opinion is more powerful, is network effect. Let's talk about it more. We talked about how big the network is. The beauty is that attraction of this network is increasing. Every new retailer or supplier who joins Commerce Hub network makes us stronger. There are also significant economies of scale of onboarding. Think about it in a hypothetical example. Let's say there are 10 retailers who want to sign up a new supplier. If they were to do it by themselves, collectively, they will do it 10 times. If all of them happen to be Commerce Hub customers, onboarding will happen only once. This creates massive collective savings. Commerce Hub would retain some of them and will pass the rest of them to its customers. Thus, it will benefit everybody involved. And finally, as we mentioned before, network effect results in very low customer acquisition costs. Now let's talk about customers and churn, since this is the key metric for a typical software as a service company. Retailer churn is minimal. During our due diligence, we were able to identify very few retail customers who left Commerce Hub. One is Circuit City. Well, Circuit City had a very good reason to leave Commerce Hub. It went bankrupt in the 2008-2009 crisis. Target. Target decided several years ago to go in-house with its solution. There are also some smaller retailers whose name we do not know, who left Commerce Hub at different points in history, but typically it was a scale issue. Those customers never generated enough of e-commerce presence, and as a result, dropshipping business and Commerce Hub dropshipping solution was not really relevant for them. Supply churn. Supply churn is significant, but this is exactly what benefits Commerce Hub. First of all, suppliers do not leave Commerce Hub on their own will. If a retailer terminates supplier, for example, supplier's products did not generate enough revenue, such a supplier would obviously stop being Commerce Hub custom in that particular case. There is, as a result, a high churn among suppliers than among retailers, but this supply turnover actually helps Commerce Hub with its unique value proposition. As you may recall, we talked that one of those elements of Commerce Hub value proposition is helping retailers with onboarding suppliers. And this is where the churn of suppliers benefits Commerce Hub. Competition. Let's talk about competitors. There are three groups of competitors. First, there are traditional legacy on-premise solutions. This is point-to-point architecture, and as a result, it's very difficult and expensive to maintain and update. There is also in-house solutions. Remember, Target went in-house with its own dropshipping program. There are no benefits of scale there. It makes it more expensive, and only very, very few largest retailers can build solid in-house solutions, maintain them well, and be at the frontier of technological innovation. And there can be other SaaS players. However, we were not able to identify any SaaS player in dropshipping space who is big and mature enough and whose product is solid and strong enough to compete with Commerce Hub. Let's talk a little bit more about this point of legacy software solutions and how they're based on multitude of point-to-point connections. As you can see here, in our example, there are three suppliers and there are three retailers. And each of them has to be connected to the other. As a result, there are all these multiple connections. Now, think about it. Let's say retailer one updates its own software, its on-premise software solutions. Then each supply needs to go and do the same on their own end at their office. This is a very painful process. This is an expensive process. You need to maintain pretty smart IT people or internally in-house who will do that for you. And if there are any mishaps, then the retailer all of a sudden cannot drop ship, supply one or two or three products. This creates nightmare. That's why those solutions are not as good. This is Commerce Hub drop shipping offering. This is how its infrastructure looks like. And as you can see, it does visually look like a real true network. Suppliers are connected to Commerce Hub. There's only one connection for each supplier. And then retailers are also connected to Commerce Hub with only one connection. And then Commerce Hub inside it connects them to each other seamlessly. If there is a need to update, Commerce Hub will do it. There is no need to do massive updates on the back end at each supplier's or retailer's premises. These are in-house solutions, as we spoke about them, and very few retailers can actually do that well. SaaS players, as mentioned, we were not able to identify any players who are mature enough, have good scale, and have a strong product. Can they work with maybe some small retailers? Maybe. Can they work with some sizable players? Not really. There are also what we called and what we found in our due diligence, so-called drop shipping perceived competitors. And we're referring to SPS Commerce and Channel Advisor. What we mean by perceived competitors? When we went through SPS Commerce and Channel Advisor earnings calls and filings, both of them do talk about drop shipping. However, they do a very different product and they provide a very different service than Commerce Hub. Why? Solutions which SPS and Channel Advisor offer are used by suppliers only. They may be a de minimis use by retailers, but it's truly, truly de minimis. What happens is that suppliers may be using SPS Commerce or Channel Advisor for drop shipping. However, if a retailer to whom they drop ship uses Commerce Hub, then a supplier will have to use both Commerce Hub drop shipping solution as well as, for example, SPS Commerce. That's why they're not really competing. They are more like a complement or supplement. We also believe that there is a lot of confusion about comparability of these three companies right now among investors. And I think that also is contributing to the general mispricing of Commerce Hub securities. Now let's talk about Brands Initiative. We mentioned it briefly. Now let's dive in. Brands Initiative is effectively a startup within Commerce Hub. It generates about $10 million in revenue and it loses money. Brands Initiative enables consumer brands manage their direct sales through marketplaces, social channels, and other similar channels. You can think of Brands Initiative software as a service offering as a master catalog that a brand would update only once, and then it syncs with all direct channels that a brand is using for its direct sales. Brief history. In 2015, early in the year, Commerce Hub acquired a company called Mercent for about $20 million. Mercent was providing a software solution for brands that would enable them to create one central product catalog that would link to various websites and marketplaces. Mercent had about $10 million revenue at the time of the acquisition. So as you can see, Commerce Hub paid only 2x revenue, which we find for a company with interesting technology, which is in very early stages, is a quite well-done acquisition. Commerce Hub acquired Mercent for technology and not its customer base. There were two groups of customers of Mercent at the time. One is self-service customers. Second is managed service customers. And one group is attractive and another one is not. Self-service customers use software as a service and require very little human element. There's very little hand-holding involved. As a result, that business is highly scalable. It has high gross margins, which makes a fundamentally attractive business. However, managed service clients are quite different. First, they do still use SaaS offering, but lots of services are provided by Commerce Hub employees. There is lots of hand holding. As a result, there is less scalability, there are low gross margins, and this makes a business which is less fundamentally attractive. And Commerce Hub wants to focus on self-service clients. Commerce Hub wants to focus on bigger clients. Thus, many legacy clients are not really desirable for Commerce Hub. And Commerce Hub is intentionally churning them. And it has been doing so since the time it acquired Mercent. So far, Commerce Hub was doing a pretty good job in terms of getting rid of smaller clients, which require a lot of handholding and generate lower margins. And it already had two very nice wins on the client side. One is Mattel and another one is Adidas. There are important implications for Commerce Hub as far as brands initiative goes. One needs to analyze dropshipping business, which is the core, separately from brands initiative. Because brands initiative makes Commerce Hub consolidated financials look weaker. First, its revenue growth looks lower. Gross margin is lower. And EBITDA margin is lower, and absolute number of EBITDA is lower as well because brands initiative is currently losing money. In terms of strategic and financial importance going forward, I think brands initiative can be tremendous. First of all, Commerce Hub can build second sizable business. Third, brands initiative mitigates the risk of retailers, and thus Commerce Hub being disintermediated by brands going direct to consumer. Now, let's talk about valuation. You may recall that we mentioned that Commerce Hub trades at a huge discount to similar SaaS players. So this is what we did. We picked Commerce Hub, Channel Advisor, and SPS Commerce as three companies, which operate in retail SaaS vertical. And this is the multiples you can see. Couple of important notes. Our metrics, whether it's revenue, adjusted EBITDA, or EBITDA minus stock-based compensation for Commerce Hub, includes both businesses, core dropshipping, as well as brands initiative. As you can see, Commerce Hub trades at a higher revenue multiple than its two peers. We think it's justified and that premium is well deserved, given significantly better margin profile. If you look at EV to adjusted EBITDA, and by adjusted EBITDA here, we mean really EBITDA before stock-based compensation. Commerce Hub has a discount of 10 to 20 charms. And if you include the impact from stock-based compensation and use enterprise value to 2017 EBITDA minus stock-based compensation, you will see that Commerce Hub trades at even bigger discount. In fact, in case of Channel Advisor, EBITDA minus stock-based compensation is negative. That was relative valuation. But what about absolute valuation? Is that attractive? Here we need to make a few notes about how we approach an valuation exercise here. So first of all, there are very few sell-side analysts who cover Commerce Hub. And those who do lump together financials of dropshipping business and brand initiative right now together. We strongly disagree with that approach. In our view, sum of the parts valuation is the best. We need to value dropshipping business separately, and we need to value brand initiative separately. We also treat stock-based compensation as a true expense, and we treat capitalized software, if any, as a true expense as well. This is a slide with our key assumptions. We will not be covering them right now in detail, but at your own time, you can go through them, review. If you don't like some of them, you can use your own. We try to provide here as much visibility into our thought process and what we view as important metrics here as we can. There are a couple of important notes here. First of all, many people say that valuation is an art, not science. We think that in case of Commerce Hub, this is definitely the case. It's an art, not science, and it's also mixed with intelligent guesswork. Disclosure is very limited as far as breaking financials into Commerce Hub, core dropshipping business, and brands initiative goes. Thus, guesswork was required. Note that none of these numbers which we presented before may ever show up in Commerce Hub financials in the future because the way it reports only consolidated numbers. We have stated our assumptions clearly, and you can play with them. We would also point out that in third quarter 2016, Commerce Hub changed its accounting policies related to capitalization of software development. We intentionally did not incorporate the impact of such changes so that we have comparability to prior periods. In other words, what Commerce Hub will be expensing going forward, we still put in our model as capitalized software. But again, because we are expensing that in our modeling, in getting to what we call true economic EBITDA, it has no impact on the end number. So where do we get with all this? So based on our work, we think that Commerce Hub is like in 2020 is quite likely to approach EBITDA minus public company cost minus software minus stock-based compensation of roughly 75, 78 million. We're putting a multiple of 16 on that. We're also incorporating the cash which Commerce Hub will be building during the next 2 years. And please note that we are assuming that the cash will be just sitting on the balance sheet rather than Commerce Hub doing something intelligent. It can be, some of the intelligent options may include M&A transactions. Some of them can be including share buybacks. They can do something else. Remember, this is an entity where John Malone still owns about 5% based on economic interest and has about 30% plus of voting power. And Liberty entities are well known for very smart capital allocation decisions. We are incorporating annual dilution due to issuance of options going forward, and we arrive to a price target of about $30 based on dropshipping only. Remember, currently shares trade at about $17. Now, is exit multiple of 16 justified? In our opinion, yes. And there are a few reasons for that. First, we sincerely believe that even in 2020, Commerce Hub will still have a long growth runway. Second, we also believe that by 2020, Commerce Hub moat will be even stronger than now. Remember that we are incorporating full impact of stock-based compensation. If you use adjusted EBITDA, which we do not like using, but this is how many sell-side analysts, if not all of them, do it, the multiple, headline multiple, would be actually lower, slightly more than 15 times. Now, what do we do with Ben's initiative? How should we value that? The truth is that there is no right answer. We'll give you three approaches, and one can come up with even more of them, and then you can pick which one you like the most. One approach is capitalize losses which are currently generated by Brand's initiative forever. We estimate that Brand's initiative is losing about $4 million to $8 million of cash losses. Again, this includes capitalized software. However, we view a scenario where the company will keep making those losses for many years and management does nothing is incredibly unlikely. Remember, CEO is well aligned with his 5% option grant. John Malone still owns some shares in the company. We do believe that that scenario is unlikely. Second scenario, losses continue for 2 years. Then Commerce Hub declares Brand's initiative as a failure and they shut it down. In our opinion, this is more realistic than number one. And this is more realistic due to aligned incentives. What we really think is more likely is scenario number three. There will be losses for 2 years, 17 and probably 18, and then business will become break even, moves to positive EBITDA territory, and will become cash flow generative as well. The truth is that right now we have no data to model that scenario well and evaluate the impact. Can this business become 20 million in revenue business, 30, 50? Can EBITDA margin be 25%, 35%? Quite frankly, any of this is possible. For our purposes for now, we will go with approach number two, even though we do not believe it's likely. And if we use approach number two, this is how Brand's initial situation would look like. It's slightly negative, 63 cents right now. We're assuming 30 million in cumulative losses in 17, 18, 19, even though management spoke about its aspirational goal of getting to break even in late 18 or early 19. And we want to emphasize that we do not think that Brand's initiative actually has a negative value. We're using the negative value above as a thought experiment to show that Commerce Hub is still a great investment despite even this draconian approach. Let's put it all together. We believe that Commerce Hub will be generating 15% plus IRR, and that's achievable through 2020. We also believe that 2020 will not be the end of the story. Remember early on, we said that it was a special situation, but turned out to be a compounder. This is exactly that. And finally, if Brand's initiative is successful, and we think it will be, that relation will prove to be really conservative. Let's talk about risks. There are two big risks in our opinion here. First is overall health of retailers. To thrive, Commerce Hub needs to be working in an environment where there are multiple retailers. Some of Commerce Hub customers are weak, JCPenney and Sears. Other customers are strong, Home Depot, Costco. Please note that we are not betting on brick and mortar retailers' revival. Not at all. We just need enough traditional retailers to stay in business. In fact, in our opinion, massive store closures would likely shift traditional retailers' focus on e-commerce and dropshipping, and that will benefit Commerce Hub. The second risk is customer concentration. Two retail customers, together with their suppliers, accounted for more than 10% of Commerce Hub revenue in 2016. The third largest customer, which is most likely QVC, together with its suppliers, accounted for 7%. Next three customers accounted for 5% plus. So if you put it all together, at the very least, top six customers account for 42% of revenue. This is substantial. Needless to say, loss of any of them would be very detrimental for Commerce Hub. We think that retailers, and this is confirmed based on our channel checks, like working with Commerce Hub, they like the software offering, they like constant innovation, which Commerce Hub is pursuing. Can a sizable retailer build something similar in-house if they put enough resources? Probably. Can they maintain it as a state-of-the-art technology going forward? Unlikely. Plus, we need to remember that even if they build a channel solution, they will still need to do with onboarding, which is a real pain point, and they will not be able to benefit from that economy of scale which Commerce Hub has created. Thus, we are willing to bear those risks. In our opinion, we're bearing them in an intelligent way, meaning we're well compensated for them, but we're constantly monitoring any developments on that front. If you have any questions, you can reach me. This is my email, this is my phone number, and thank you so much for your attention.
Artem, thank you for sharing such an interesting and clearly such a wide mode idea. This was really fascinating. I was taking some notes as you were speaking, and I'd love to ask a few questions as follow-up. A lot of what I heard reminds me of fulfillment by Amazon. I'm wondering if that comparison is appropriate, and if so, how you think about the comparison.
The comparison is appropriate, Shai, at a high conceptual level. And I'm really glad that you brought it up because I did not get into this during the presentation. So at the high level, yes, it's comparable because it removes the pain points, it helps fulfill. So that's, I think, where comparison is justified. Now, if we want to take it one step further and say, well, Amazon is building this Fulfill by Amazon business and it has been very successful. A lot of their customers like it and customer likes it. So is it a threat for Commerce Hub? That would be, I think, a logical continuation of what you asked. And in my opinion, while technologically Amazon is definitely capable of competing with Commerce Hub going forward, if they want to build something similar, I think there is an issue of Amazon trying to sell this solution to players like Home Depot, to customers like Toys R Us, and all those retailers who justifiably use Amazon as a real threat for them. Imagine this, you're chief of strategy or chief of e-commerce for Home Depot, and someone comes to you and says, would you like to give all that data and how you work to Amazon? I think the answer is no. And what I want to highlight here, and this is what we heard from a few customers which we spoke, is that customers like that when Commerce Hub innovates, they put all those features and those new functionalities to their clients. And one of the clients actually said, we like that Commerce Hub is watching closely anything which Amazon is doing on Amazon, fulfilled by Amazon business. And if they see something what the Commerce Hub would think is valuable for retailers, they introduce those features very quickly. What I am getting at here, Shai, is that I think Amazon actually is increasing the bar both from the end customer perspective, such as you and me, as well as retailers' customer perspective every single day. And Commerce Hub is benefiting from that constantly raising bar because for in-house clients, whether it's Home Depot or somewhere else, it would be very difficult to create the technology and then constantly keep raising the bar if they decide to do it in-house. So thank you again for this question.
I noticed you did not mention PFS Web, which is a publicly traded company, and I believe their client base includes See's Candy, Movado, L'Oreal, Advanced Auto Parts, and I believe they're also doing e-commerce fulfillment. I'm wondering if you chose not to mention PFS Web because it's not relevant, or perhaps it's something very small, which might not be comparable, or it's a new name that should be explored as well, maybe.
Based on what we know right now is that their offering is quite different from Commerce Hub. That's why we didn't mention them.
And I believe you mentioned that this company specifically has a very nice margin profile. When I hear you say that, it makes me think that maybe there's pricing risk. Competition could undercut the price. Do you think the margins might be too good potentially?
This is something that one always worries when we see a company with what we think is a wide moat, and as a result has great margin profile, and we look at that and think, okay, how does it look like? Are they protectable? Are they defensible? So I would point a few things here. So number one is the gross margin which Commerce Hub has is comparable to other software as a service players. Number two, the reason why they have high EBITDA margins is mostly because they have very low sales and marketing expense. The R&D, on the other hand, is significant. As a result, Commerce Hub is constantly investing in new features to keep their customers happy. And what we found out through multiple interviews is that they typically introduce those new features without raising the prices if you want that feature. In other words, they're not coming to their clients and say, if you want this new feature, you need to pay a little bit extra. They're not doing that. So they're constantly working on delighting their customer, which I think is very important, both from an end customer perspective, as well as maintaining the right customer-focused culture. Now, another element here, which is at play, is the network effect and those switching costs. They are high. Can someone try to come and eat into Commerce Hub margin? There is always a risk, and that's why we want to monitor that position rather than invest in it and forget about it. However, there are a few things which make us comfortable. In order for someone to get the same scale, they will need to go and first invest tens of millions of dollars, if not more, into R&D. Then they will need to go and persuade Toys for Us, Home Depot, Costco, and other retailers to try them. Give us a try, we will give you a cheaper price. Right now, they're running at 75, Commerce Hub is running at about 75 basis points, if you include both subscription fee and the usage fee of GMV, which is processors. How much do we need to drop in order to make a large retailer switch and risk that? In terms of practical applications, if you think about a retailer trying to switch, that's a really painful process. What do you do? Do you first send, let's say, 10 or 20% of your GMV to a new provider who's trying to replace Commerce Hub, and then keep 80% on Commerce Hub, and then you shift it, and then you shift the rest later after 6 months or something like this? It means that you really need to double, if not more, your staff who is working on those issues internally. That's a real cost. Also, when customers are happy and when customers are dealing with a mission critical, and this is a mission critical, if you go and buy something on the website and it's not delivered on the time when it was promised to be delivered, and it arrives 2 weeks later because there was some mishap in the software, guess what? Next time you're not going to buy from that retailer. And the retailers know that. and retailers are facing increasingly high competition from Amazon. So in our opinion, why we always worry about anybody who is having high margins? We feel comfortable that they are protectable and they're defensible. And what is important, Commerce Hub is being proactive to defend them.
I understand why the switching cost is very high to leave. It makes perfect sense why you do not risk your business for 75 basis points. I'd love to ask you if the opposite works of the switching cost being high to come in. Is it similarly unlikely people switch what they have and take a risk of losing customers to join Commerce Hub?
That's a great question, Shai. So this is how we think about it. If you are switching from a legacy software, and most of the customers are switching from exactly that, so it will be coming back to our architecture slide, it will be more expensive and more burdensome to maintain that, and it will create less good than staying there. In other words, disrupting Commerce Hub is meaning you need to create as good of a product or significantly better product at the same price if it's significantly better, or at a lower price if it's similar. That's a difficult proposition. However, if you want to switch from, for example, this point-of-point connection architecture, which is expensive, does not perform as well, it's really painful to onboard your supplies because you need to onboard them one by one. If you need to run any updates through the software, they'll need to do it. Some of those supplies do not have a very sophisticated IT people. That's painful. That's why I think Commerce Hub was able successfully sign up those big retailers, and it has about 50 of them right now, and it keeps signing them. That's why we think Commerce Hub is not suffering from those switching costs, because they offer significantly superior product right now, and they are solving those pain points going forward, and they reduce the maintenance costs. In other words, the benefits are so significant that all those retailers were willing to switch and from whoever they were using before, and that's process continues.
And if we could please move to the final slide one more time, please.
Of course.
I'd love to ask you, how could we be value add to you? What type of feedback would be helpful? What type of conversations do you welcome? Please give us some clarity of what is value add.
Well, first of all, I was very happy to present today because I have a lot of respect and admiration for what John and Shai do at Manual of Ideas. I'm a subscriber. I love reading it. And I'm happy to give back by sharing my idea and being an instructor today. We welcome feedback on our ideas. They may be people who are listening to this who work in retail space. They may be people who work in software space. They may be people who know the industry. We welcome their feedback. We welcome their thoughts. If any other listener today has evidence which is contradictory to our findings, we would love to hear that. It may force us to rethink our approach and change our mind. Or maybe it will make our conviction and the idea stronger. We welcome all those dialogues and conversations. Sometimes we have interns who intern at Karakan Capital and help us with our research process. If any of them happen to be listening to this, they can reach out to me as well.
Artem, again, we very much appreciate the time that you shared with us, the wisdom that you shared with us. We know how much work goes into making such a great presentation. Thank you for being so generous, and we hope to welcome you back in the future. Very much are grateful that you're here, and we hope you receive meaningful feedback. Have a great day, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Shai. It was my pleasure.